This is 69 the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 69 has been covering the digital signage industry since the dawn of man, first online and now as a podcast. The goal on here is to make listeners aware of interesting companies, smart people, and new technology developments, all of them meaningful in making digital signage projects happen. I try to help listeners understand sometimes complicated subjects and why they should care. The podcasts are free and I try to get a new one out weekly, but things happen now and then. The 69 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported since the start by Jeremy Gavin and the fine folks at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 69 has been around since 2006, and the publication and podcast are now owned by Spectrio, which provides customer engagement solutions for business. You can find them at spectrio.com. When I first spoke with industry lifer Ivy Dixon about his move from software to the managed services firm SageNet, the company was still in the relatively early days of getting itself organized to chase and then service digital signage opportunities. 5 years on, digital environments like chain retail and QSR are a core, what he calls consequential part, of the Oklahoma company's overall business. SageNet's role has evolved from being an IT-centric managed services company that was adding digital signage to its deployment and network management capabilities to having a main service line called SageView. It's a full meal deal suite of services that run from the ideation stage all the way through deployment and ongoing management. These kinds of turnkey all-in solutions are relatively common now in the marketplace, but the SageNet twist is its deep roots, experience and acumen in the hardcore aspects of networking design, connectivity and cybersecurity. Dixon started out at SageNet as the digital signage guy, but as business has grown and with the staffing and skill sets associated with that work, he now has a role as SageNet's chief innovation officer, looking more broadly at all the technologies that have a role in or influence customer projects. Ivy Dixon, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Dave. How are you this morning?
I am good. We haven't chatted. We both checked. we did a podcast back in 2019, so it's time for an update, I would say.
We did. Lots happened in 5 years. If nothing else, a pandemic, but also just a lot's happened in the SageNet and SageView world for us.
Yes. Last time I saw you, we were walking up a very long hill to the Barcelona football stadium, and you're probably keeping a wary eye on me to make sure I didn't have a heart attack.
Yeah, I don't know. It might have been mutual there, Dave. But I do know, though, it was worth the walk. That I will yes. say that was worth the walk.
Every little bit of it, yeah.
Exactly.
So over those 5 years, quite a bit has changed with your company. I would say the big thing from my perspective is 5 years ago, SageNet was starting to get heavy into digital signage, but it was one of the things that a larger company did. And, you know, when I look at the website now, I kind of see SageNet leading in certain respects with what it does in terms of digital experience and digital signage in general. Is that a fair assessment?
It is a fair assessment. And by the way, my marketing team will be very glad to hear that, because I think that's a positioning that we want to take and have taken. But we've also really, we've positioned ourselves in the market to be that, but also executed in the market to be that. And I think, you know, if I think about 5 years ago, one of the things I think I probably even said it 5 years ago in this podcast was, we're a managed service provider in an integrator world. Mm-hmm. How that really hasn't changed in many respects. There's still great integrators out there. However, what really has changed for us is the way people are now coming and looking at digital experience and digital engagement and pure digital signage, right? Call mm-hmm. it passive or kind of consumable digital signage. It's become more important today than ever to manage that in an ongoing fashion. And management is not just content. It's everything. Is the screen on? Is the player running? Is if it's broken or when it's broken, how are you getting it fixed? Right. And that's a big piece of the puzzle. And over 5 years, we've grown a lot. I mean, we've grown exponentially, to be honest, in this area. We were we were a few customers with a few thousand devices out in the world, and now we're north of 100,000 devices that are under management in that digital experience realm.
So as a managed services company as a whole, what does digital signage and digital signage-ish activities represent for the company? I don't need like an exact percentage, but I'm just curious. Sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question, because it's something that actually was a driver for me in my previous role at SageNet as the VP of digital signage and digital experience, was really to make it a piece of our business that was consequential. Mm-hmm. And so at this point in time, whereas 5 years ago, it was just a mosquito kind of on the sideline of our portfolio, it is now one of the pillars of our organization. Mm-hmm. So if you look at our organization historically, we still track in the traditional managed services of circuitry and router switch firewall. However, now the idea of IoT and IoT management and then digital experience and digital signage management kind of line up in three pillars there for us.
I have heard a few times now that one of the things that's really changed in the last 5 years or so, again, is how historically the first meetings that you would have with a larger enterprise level customer or prospective customer would be with the visual merchandising people, HR people, business communicators, that sort of thing. And the IT people would be there, but only begrudgingly. And now they tend to lead these initiatives and guide them. Are you seeing that? And has that helped the case for SageNet, because they're familiar with the kind of work that you do?
Yes and yes. Yes, we are seeing that shift in who's leading the effort. And yes, that has been obviously fruitful for SageNet, but also just for the market as in general, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is the marketing initiative has not been dampened. It's still the guiding light or the North Star that's associated with the effort. However, now you're getting buy-in from the organization about the importance of this type of infrastructure in a distributed environment. Mm-hmm. So if you have 1,000 restaurants or you have 500 or 1,000 stores, all of a sudden, when you have a director or even a CIO level IT person in the room saying, this is something that's consequential to our business, that changes the level of investment from a general brand perspective. Mm-hmm. The other thing, though, that we've seen, to be honest, is we've seen it even scope outside of IT and marketing and move into even operational folks that are in the building, or as everybody's talking about, retail media networks, and how does this bigger trade or merchandiser world factor into that conversation as well, depending on the brand?
One of the other big pillars that SageNet has is cybersecurity. Are you finding that's helpful in the pitch and in the ongoing effort for clients, in that you have that pedigree, you have that understanding? It's not something like, oh yeah, we do have a cyber guy, his name is, let me look it up, it's right. It's part of your DNA.
Exactly. Yeah, it that's one of the greatest parts of our extended portfolio. Mm-hmm. So about a year ago, I took this role of Chief Innovation Officer, and it's been a journey for me not only to understand some of the technologies that I didn't understand that well, but also to wrap my brain around how do customers see that footprint. And to your point about cybersecurity, if you look not only at cyber, but you look at how cellular is affecting the market, mm-hmm. and you also look at then the pure infrastructure that's going into one of these restaurants, right, or into one of these retailers, and you start to realize that the POS the point of sale that used to be one of the primary network consumers, and by the way, it's still one of the primary from a cyber perspective. Mm-hmm. However, it's a very small footprint compared to all the other aggregate devices that they now have talking on the network, whether that be IoT monitoring devices, or whether it be digital signage and digital experience devices, or whether it be, you know, guest and or brand Wi-Fi. All of a sudden, the cyber level or the management of that connectivity becomes even more important than it was maybe 10 years ago. And now you have the, you know, you have changes in that market around not only how it's managed, but also around protocols that are being utilized. And you start to look at PCI 4.0, and all of a sudden the brands are getting that much more intense in their needs, but also smarter in their requirements. And so when you bring in a media player and a screen, they no longer say, hey, we're going to stick this on the network. They want to deep dive into how that's going to communicate and communicate with what and for what purposes.
Yeah, I'm thinking a lot of more traditional pro AV integration companies and solutions providers don't have that perspective, don't have that experience to, you know, when you look at something like a restaurant or a retail operation, as you just said, all the different business systems and sensors and everything falling into it, it's just a big chore to be able to try to understand all that.
It is. And luckily I have a fantastic team members, right? And we've brought in folks that have, you know, senior level capabilities from the industry, not only from pure restaurant retail, but also folks from the IT side. We have fantastic folks that are in our organization to be able to tackle that, because, you know, to your point, one of the differences, and I talked to many of our partners about this in the industry, one of the differences in our business that a lot of people don't recognize from a traditional integrator perspective is when we walk in the door as SageNet, we make two near assumptions if we're talking to a restaurant or even a retailer. We A, make the assumption that you're geographically dispersed, which means you're probably over at least 5, if not 10 or 50 states. So you're all over the country. But the second assumption we make is that your ownership environment potentially is variable. And what that means is it could be franchise, it could be dealer, it could be, you know, it's some qualification of licensee. And in that scenario, you're then adding a layer of complexity to that individualized brick and mortar environment that you're servicing. And that creates major complexity in the process.
Yeah, because they might not all use the same business systems for some core operations, right?
You got it. You got it. Especially when you get into the dealer and licensee world. And that's really where our focus on that, what happens in the quote unquote four walls of that local environment. Mm-hmm. And then how do we bring that back to a more macro level of IT and AV management?
One of the things that SageNet did that I assume kind of added to its breadth of capabilities and bench strength was acquiring Convergent back in, I think it was 21. Mm-hmm. Why was that done and what has that meant?
Yeah, it's yes, we did acquire Convergent Media Systems back in 21. Good memory. And the, you know, it's an interesting conversation of why was it done versus what has it meant. I think it's relative to both, and yet there's some separation, right? Mm-hmm. The interesting thing that a lot of folks don't know is that there was some distant relationship between SageNet and Convergent prior to the acquisition because of the VSAT environment that actually SageNet acquired from SpaceNet the better part of 10 plus years ago. And so part of our business is VSAT uplink for connectivity. And Convergent back in the day was doing much of their delivery of CorpCom and digital signage and whatnot, TV broadcast type work over VSAT protocols. So there was some natural connection there that kind of tied the two organizations together. However, at really the kind of height of the pandemic, luckily, in some respects, but also prescribed in others, SageNet had grown and our SageView digital offering had grown to about half of the size that it is today. And we'd done that organically, right? We had team members that we had grown a fair amount of operational team members at the time. We had brought on Rob Cefaletta back from the Seneca Data Days, and he was there a few years, and so things were starting to churn, and we were about half the size that we are today. The acquisition at the time of Convergent took that business and positioned it in a place where it was about double, not quite, but about double. And so it was very substantial. The other piece of that puzzle, and I'm very proud to say this, is we acquired some really fantastic folks in that acquisition, including some real leaders in the digital industry who have actually substantially more experience than I do, 30 years in this industry, from broadcast to digital signage. So in that moment, we kind of bolstered our operational environment. What subsequently has happened, and it's a good outcome of any acquisition when you can make this happen, is we are now a broader force to deal with in the market. And so our capabilities are beyond just installation, monitoring, management of hardware and software. And now we have capabilities to build solutions, to code against APIs and or pure IP. We also have creative capabilities to augment what customers may have or what they may want through our experience labs group. And so there's the footprint now of the capabilities that we bring to the table is a much more rounded out environment than it was 3 years ago when we first made that acquisition.
Now, does that all roll up under SageView?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, SageView is our SageNet sub-brand, you would call it, and that is specifically digital experience and digital signage.
Okay.
And then there's some kind of muddying of the waters between that and our Sage IoT environment.
For over a decade, ScreenFeed has been the reliable choice for beautifully designed, licensed content such as news and weather. We handle over 27 million requests a day to deliver dynamic content to 200,000 screens across the globe. Now we bring you ScreenFeed Connect, a no-code solution that makes complex content projects easy. Projects that used to take our designers and developers weeks became a to-do we could complete before lunch. The easy-to-use browser-based tool leverages pre-built data connections and ready-made widgets to give you the power to design with data. Create team member profiles, schedules, tenant directories, progress boards, featured products, or anything that leverages your data. Discover how Connect empowers you to complete projects faster at ScreenFeed.com.
I remember going back a couple of years, I think I referenced it as kind of a full meal deal offer now that you can take a project right from the idea stage all the way through to ongoing management and do things like you just mentioned, doing the creative work and so on.
Yes, that's exactly right. Yeah. And if you look, if you look at just digital experience, our capabilities to now engineer and design an outcome and a solution, and then bring that to fruition by hardware acquisition, as well as configure kit and install. But then all of that, as we still really talk about on a daily basis, it's every conversation that we have, we do a lot of that just for the purpose of day two, because still 5 years later, we talked about this 5 years ago, I'm sure, mm-hmm. the value of that technology is on day two or day 50 or day 500. It's only, you know, as somebody in my organization says, day one is only cool for 24 hours, right? So yeah. That's really a big piece of that. But then, as we were talking about earlier, with regards to the portfolio, when you expand that digital experience, that SageView footprint, and you start to add Sage Connect, whether that be cellular or otherwise, you start to add Sage IoT, then all of a sudden the footprint even gets bigger in terms of that. And that's really where we strive. And you look at someone like Noodles & Company, for example, that's a solution that we have been a network provider for many years. We subsequently last year rolled out to all of their corporate locations with digital and with a network upgrade. But that's where the entire infrastructure of that four walls is key to that conversation.
Are you having companies come to you primarily with the idea of SageNet is capable of handling the degree of scale that we're looking at? Like we need to be out to 800 stores in the next 6 months or something like that, versus jobs that, let's say, an Electrosonic, those kinds of companies might do. That's an airport. It's one location. It's one big wow factor thing that I suppose in theory you guys could do, but that's not really your sweet spot, is it?
No, not at all. And actually, to be totally honest with you, we sometimes leave those deals on the table on purpose. And when you talk about scale and deployment, that is such a key piece to this environment that people do forget. And it's hard to roll out that type of technology in it, not only at scale, but fast. And mm-hmm. and these retailers and restaurants expect fast. Back in the 21, we were in the midst of a deal that we are still managing today. They had extremely high expectations of rollout, and we were doing nearly 300 installations a day during the month of June of 2021. and that was, we did the better part of 10,000 installations in 11 months. So
retail or QSR?
Or a retail. Okay. But you look at, I mentioned Noodles, that's about 400 locations. Mm-hmm. We did all of that in the 2023 calendar year for the most part, right? All but 95% plus.
So you have to have some serious project managers.
Yeah, we do have some serious project managers. That's one of the things I really like is we have those, call them macro or global project managers. We also have a really amazing field management team. And those folks are dealing with Config and Kit and our National Logistics Center, getting it out, and then the on-site technicians to make sure that that installation is done correct.
Is the competitive landscape evolving? Like, are you seeing different kinds of companies getting in, the competitive mix on opportunities?
Yeah, that's right. When you started to ask that question, I thought, boy, howdy, has it changed? And yet, if you look at the vertical markets, some things are identical to what they were before. I would say retail is still pretty similar. Mm-hmm. The folks who play in retail and who really excel in retail haven't changed a ton. Where we do see a lot of change in the market space from a competitive landscape perspective is in QSR, in quick serve restaurant and fast casual. There's not only is there a lot of new names, they're not really new to the market, but they're new in that space. There's also a lot of different offerings, and it's very cloudy. It's extremely cloudy in selecting a provider mm-hmm. because we're not, there are a handful of folks that do what we do or similar to what we do. There's a handful of folks who really are on the manufacturing side and creating great technologies, but they're selling those as holistic solutions, and they might not be. And then you still have the, you know, the historic landscape of the content management systems and CMSs out there that everybody goes, well, I don't know what to do with 85 CMSs, right? So that's where the competitive landscape is still the same, and yet you are seeing a lot of volatility in who's in the room.
Does it get murky because you have all kinds of companies with different sorts of software-driven systems that can bolt on a very rudimentary digital signage application and say, okay, here we've got a digital menus application for you. You don't need to buy a pay or license a CMS or something else. Just use this. Do you get those questions?
You do. And you get some of that bolt on conversation. And by the way, you know, some of that is probably in our pitch deck as well, because there are things that we do that are custom to a customer or customized for a customer around that. However, I think one of the landscape changes, you know, if you think about my background, I was at Scala Stratacache and back at NanoNation, and you know, we're talking over 20 years. I've watched a lot of that change. I think a lot of people today, there's two factors that kind of drive that. One, there's a lot of people who don't understand the complexity of managing an enterprise level menu. And so they think their template manager, they think their, you know, simple integrations will do it. And when you get down to what might be 50 or 100 or even 200 configurations, it's extremely complex to manage all that content and data. I think the other thing, though, that's driving that conversation that people don't really the customer really struggles with picking the right solution is today, data integration and usage in menus is higher than it's ever been. The ability to get calories and price and even dynamic images or have dynamic capabilities to resort menus based on configurations. There's more landscape around that type of capability than we've ever had before. That clutters the idea of what does my CMS do in its pure interface? What does the UI take care of versus what am I going to have to go build and manage? And we, to be honest, in many respects, we have fantastic CMS partners, and yet we downplay the use of that interface because most customers want that managed, and they they're not going to go and become experts inside of a CMS interface.
Yeah, years ago, a very large QSR contacted me, and they were very irritated with their CMS company because of some business moves that they made. And they engaged me as a consultant. And one of the first questions was, okay, well, what do you think of the software? Because you know, they wanted to consider moving on from it. And
right.
I said, well, we've never seen it.
Right.
And I said, pardon me? And they said, well, it's all managed. And I said, well, can you get a login? And they said, well, we can ask for one, but we've never logged in or anything. And
right.
I thought, whoa, this is like completely managed remotely. And I guess it was a glimpse of where a lot of the business was going, because, you know, you want to focus on making coffees or whatever the heck it is you
absolutely.
Do.
Absolutely. Well, and also you have layers of software that are above the CMS now that are as valuable or more valuable, and yet they feed the outcome of the CMS, right? They feed the outcome of the menu. So if you have mobile data, or you have a menu data management system, or you have, you know, Adobe Experience Manager or some other creative digital asset management environment, those are all sitting in a macro environment above that CMS and then feeding in and then getting distributed down to those individual locations.
With Sage View, and you also two, 3 months ago introduced something called Digital Merchandiser, where you're doing some degree of software and like presentation level software and management software that might more traditionally be done by a CMS. Is there a bit of a dance that you have to do with your partners that where it doesn't feel like you're, you know, starting to eat their lunch?
Yeah. it's a good question. I mean, it is yes and no. I think the real key to that conversation is, in the end, SageNet builds and deploys solutions. We utilize best in breed outcomes from hardware and software providers to do that. And we utilize incredibly talented and skilled folks on the inside of our team that do that as well. Our head of R&D, who also oversees our IoT build out, David Kai, is someone who comes to the table and sees this from a greater solution perspective. So when you bring him in the room, it's not a CMS discussion. It's a outcome driven, you know, customer or end customer outcome driven environment. And I and you and I have joked online, we talked a little bit about it in Barcelona. This is actually where I embrace the idea of phygital. I know there's a lot of people who don't like that, right? However, if you really think about the idea of phygital beyond just marketing fodder, and you think physical and digital, the consumer who has made the decision to go to a brick and mortar location, they've made the decision to go to a C-store, they've made a decision to go to a restaurant, they've made a decision to go to a retailer, they have the expectation of how digital is going to affect that has just, it's just grown exponentially over the last 5 to 10 years, especially with the pandemic. It created a situation where we did almost everything digitally. So now we're going back to that. When you really think in that four-wall environment and you think about, okay, they made it to my physical location, I now want digital to enhance their experience, then phygital works for me, right? It becomes something of value. To that end, then we had to take what the infrastructure was and the solutions we were, or the best in breed pieces that we had, and create solutions around that. So you mentioned Digital Merchandiser. There's a new video out that's around an artificial intelligence shoe kiosk that we showed. This is about integration of all the parts and bringing those to a space where they become seamless for the consumer, but they become wildly valuable for the brand. And it's not just, I joked at NRF because we showed Lift and Learn, and I've shown Lift and Learn at NRF before.
Probably in 2004.
You got it, right? however, the idea of I walk in the store, I've looked at something in the mobile app, I walk up to the AI kiosk, I ask it for product, it shows me where that product is, I pick it up, I'm then having a web and physical experience in a very similar manner, or a digital and physical experience. Those capabilities have become possible because our engineering base in what we monitor and manage was extremely solid. We added the team members, not only through acquisition, but also through refinement of kind of how we engage through experience labs and bringing David Kai into those conversations with software development capabilities, and then really listening to our customer. Voice of the customer is key for this. And so that's a big piece of this puzzle, is really listening to what the customer is trying to accomplish and finding the avenues where digital can help with that, not replace it, not be the only thing, but help with that transaction.
Last question. I'm curious because, you know, we've mentioned Barcelona a couple of times. I go for my own reasons. A lot of people go over because they're selling stuff or whatever.
Sure.
as a chief innovation officer, I suspect you're going over there, A, because there's great wine, but the that you're there to kind of see what's emerging, what's different, and it's a different walk than what you're going to do walking around NRF or Infocom, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very much so. I mean, ISC for me is still a location that has more visual technology in one place than anywhere else. I can spend 3 or 4 days walking around somewhat by myself or with colleagues or friends or folks from the industry, but I can consume that and be able to say to myself, what's out there that I'm not using, or how can I use something differently? Mm-hmm. You know, I use a quote many days. I think it was a MTV founder. He said, innovation is taking two things that are known and putting them together in a new way. I think mm-hmm. that's actually the thing that we've somewhat forgotten in this industry is sometimes we don't have to go build something brand new. If we can make something new and interesting out of pieces we already have, right? And Barcelona, you know, regardless of location, although Barcelona is a great location, the reality of that conversation is I go to look to see, like, what are people doing? What is starting to drive the industry? And you know, to see the year over year refinement of transparent OLED, and to see now the influx of transparent, call them holographic. I don't know that I would call them that, but that's what, you know, the MuxWave folks call them, that environment. But then also now to see what's going on with kinetic LED and moving pieces and parts while the LED is showing visual capabilities. But then even going back, and I took a video of Epson, they had a massive umbrella, and yeah, it was covered in projectors, just a reminder that technology is out there and how it gets used. That's the kind of thing that people, I think, forget is this industry is not, there's a whole lot of new, and yet there's a whole lot of just different ways mm-hmm. to do stuff that's actually super exciting.
Yeah, I always say it's these trade shows are not about giant leaps. They're incremental advances, and
yes.
you have to have the knowledge and experience, or it's helpful mm-hmm. to have that knowledge and experience to recognize. I go, oh, that's interesting. They've done this. Right. It's not like I'm blown away by it, but they've conquered this little challenge, and now it's better.
It. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Ivy, we could talk for 3 hours, but I try to keep these to a certain time window, so I'm going to shut this down. It was great chatting.
Dave, thank you so much for the time, and look forward to seeing you soon out on the road.
That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it, and maybe you learned a thing or two. If you're new to 69, it's a podcast that's been around since 2016. You can click around the archive and find hundreds of conversations with smart industry people. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 69 at 16-9.net. You'll find more than 8,000 posts by me and expert guest writers about this industry. 16-9 is not a press release republishing mill like a lot of the stuff out there. If something makes it on 16-9, that means it matters in some way to the business. Everything about 16-9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and the key one here is ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. Check out all the curated and automated content available at ScreenFeed.com. 16-9, the blog, and the podcast are now owned by Spectrio, which does customer engagement solutions, most of that digital signage, for all kinds of businesses. You'll find them in the Tampa area and online at Spectrio. That's Spectrio.com. You'll find me working out of a sunny back room in my house located outside Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.